The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 4th of July, 2023. Happy 4th of July to our American listeners or people from America, whatever it might be. It's good to have all of you on board for a very interesting show. I hope you'll agree. We've got our usual features such as Community Garda information. That's coming up for you just after 10. For those who don't always tune in, that's your first opportunity to hear. That's your first opportunity to hear the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Síochána live. Later on in the programme, Father Sean Doherty will be joining us to have a conversation as well about his recent ordination. Looking forward to that very much indeed. If you have any messages you want to pass on to Sean, might not be able to get to them all on air, but certainly we can leave them with him. And also, we're going to be having an analysis of the announcement, finally, of the enhanced, in inverted commas, defective concrete block scheme. I think people waking up this morning, there's going to be a mixture of when people go through it, and we're going to try and break it down and go through it for you. Some people, it's going to be relief. It's going to be a pathway. It's going to be hope. For others, it's just going to be, that's no good for me. That's not going to work. Where am I going to find the extra money? We don't know really who's affected in what ways. As I say, we're going to have a panel on or plenty of guests on to try and get through all of that and try and make some sense of it, though I believe it probably might take some time to sort of get to the ins and outs of all of it. But anyway, that's what we're doing here. That is our public service broadcasting to you in our local Northwest region. Okay, how do you get involved in the conversation or pass on your messages? In the Republic, it's 086 60 25,000. If you want to text or WhatsApp from Northern Ireland, 00353 86 60 25,000, or anywhere outside the Republic. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls on 07491 25,000. Again, if you're dialing from outside the Republic, 00353 749 125,000. And if you're emailing from anywhere, no crazy codes, it's just comments at highlandradio.com. So no excuses not to get involved in the conversation. Lots to come up. All right, let's have a look at what's making the front pages today. We'll start with the Donegal Democrat. The body of a man was recovered from the water near Sleaford on Monday morning. Donegal Live, Donegal Democrat understands that Gardaí and the Coast Guard returned to the area late on Sunday night. The body was removed to Letterkenny University Hospital for a post-mortem examination. The state pathologist, Dr. Linda Mulligan, was notified and is travelling to Letterkenny to conduct the post-mortem examination. The results will, of course, determine the next steps in the investigation, which could be escalated to a murder probe. And as I said on the show yesterday morning as we revealed this news, I would say we'll probably get that information at some point today. An incident room under the direction of a senior investigating officer has been set up at Ballyshannon Garda Station. It comes after a week of intense speculation in southwest Donegal following what was described as an alleged assault. The Sleaford cliffs were closed to the public for much of last week as Gardaí combed the area for clues. And it's clear it's a complex story. I think everyone has a version of it. We choose to, but only deal with the facts, as the newspapers are the same situation. But I know there's intense conversation and speculation out there. All shall become clear in the not too distant future. The Derry Journal this morning: recent census data from the CSO has shown the population numbers of towns and villages across Inishowen, with Burnfoot the youngest area at an average age of 35, Mallin the oldest at 48.7. They're still only nippers at 48.7, aren't they? Population data from Census 2022 shows that Buncrana has a population of 6,971, with the average age of 39.2. Carndonagh, population there of 2,768, with an average age of 38.1. Well worth picking up the paper this morning if you're in the Inishowen area. I think that's where I love that kind of stuff. Statistics, and they've combed through them all, which is a piece of work in and of itself. So if you like facts and figures, there you go. It's in that paper today. On to the Irish Times now. And it's been an awful few days for loss and tragedy abroad. Gardaí have been dispatched to the Greek to the Greek island of Ios in to aid in the investigation into the death of two Irish teens in separate instances. Andrew O'Donnell and Max Wall, both aged 18 and both students of St. Michael's College in South Dublin, died within 24 hours of each other while on a holiday with classmates celebrating the end of the leaving certificate. That is the front story on the Irish Times. On to the Irish Independent today, and I'm purposely trying to weed through all the RTE stuff. There's going to be more of that later in the week with various hearings and what have you, but as there's still tons of coverage, but I'm trying to pick out other things just for this morning anyway. More than 78,000 children aged 6 and 7 are to be given free GP care in the coming weeks, the Irish Independent has learned. Well, everyone's learned it, if the truth be told. Meanwhile, another 400,000 people will qualify through an easier means test. However, due to the pressures on GPs, this will be phased in over the coming months. Now, consistently, we get complaints from people who actually... It depends on the GP practice and where you are. My GP, I get through straight away, if I'm honest. And normally it doesn't take too long to get an appointment. That's my experience. But I know it depends where you are, and other people have a very, very different experience. All I'm saying is I'm conscious that it's not quite across the board. Some people struggle to get an appointment with the GP. Some people struggle to get through to the GP. Now, when you have an additional 78,000 children and 400,000 other people able to qualify for a free GP card, it's inevitably, isn't it, going to put further pressure on that? All GPs don't necessarily have to sign up to this, but it's very lucrative, I would imagine. In fact, I have a fair idea that it is. So it'll be very interesting what impact this might have on access to GP care more generally. And we're going to hopefully, if not today, certainly tomorrow, try and get a rep on from the GP's representation body to sort of see what they say about all this. The IMO have signed up for it. So there's obviously enough in there for them. Well, what this means is a saving up to €70 a visit, although patients will still have to pay for medication. The conclusion of talks with the Irish Medical Organisation in recent days has paved the way for the long-delayed rollout of the extra GP visit cards. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly is expected to announce the move today following the finalisation of lengthy discussions with the IMO, which will see substantial extra supports for practices. So, I mean, with the financial penalty removed, you're probably more likely to even extra err on the side of caution to go along and get that antibiotic or to get that thing tested, aren't you, or checked, if you don't have to face that charge. It sounds like a strange thing to say, but I think that's a reality. I talked about avoiding the RTE story, but I can't completely. It's in the Irish Daily Mail today, and just interesting comments from Micheál Martin, I thought. Micheál Martin is not in favour of salary caps at RTE, saying they can prove problematic in time, and said he instead wants to improve average pay at the national broadcaster. Now, I would say what he's referencing there is the concern that currently at the moment, a lot of the radio stations employ people on contracts, you know, whereby they're external contracts, they're limited companies. It's not like that in stations like this, I don't think, anyway. It's certainly not the case as far as I know here. But what that does mean is that, say, you know, your morning show is starting to slip a little bit, or you're having a problem with the presenter, it's easy to move them on. But if you have them on the salary, okay, it's very difficult to move them on. And I wonder if that's what he's referring to, it being problematic. But anyway, the Tánaiste's comments come as the scandal surrounding RTE enters its 12th day since it emerged that payments to Ryan Tuberty were underrated to the tune of €345,000. The government's expected to outline its view today on private members' bill introduced in the Senedd in a bid to cap the pay for RTE's top stars at €195,000. We were speaking to Senator Mullins on this yesterday. The Tánaiste said it's simplistic. It's popular to say pay should be capped, but the actual working out of that over time can be more problematic than people might think. His view could give an indication of the government's position on the bill. So just to give you an idea of the top public jobs versus the top presenters' jobs, in case that you find that interesting. So the HSE CSO's on €420,000 for running that basket case. Ryan Tuberty, 515. Top civil servant Robert Watt, controversial enough character. He's pulling in €295. But Joe Duffy, for his hour and a quarter in the afternoon, he's getting €351,000. The Chief Justice gets €296,000. Claire Byrne, trousers, €280,000. The Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, has to survive on €270,000. Our good friend Miriam O'Callaghan, €263,000. A hospital consultant bags €252,000. Ray Darcy, for his work, €250,000. And on it goes, on it goes, on it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. Right, okay. We have Pascal Donoghue commenting on what may or may not be in the budget. He's in The Sun today. The government will not make the mistakes of the past and waste Ireland's bumper corporation tax haul. Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue has said the coalition is actively aware, or acutely aware, of the risks in spending a record government surplus of €8 billion taken in last year. He said, what is critical in all of this is while there is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in some ways regarding the higher level of tax receipts that are coming in, I am actually conscious that we have been here before, that 15 years ago there was a further spike in tax receipts that we assumed would be with us for the foreseeable future, and it turned out not to be. That being said, so what effectively they're saying is really what you're not supposed to do is spend temporary money on permanent things like housing, like health, like teaching, because then what happens when the money runs out, you can't keep up that level of spending. I don't know, there has to be a way, but anyway, that's always the argument there. Let us look at the mirror. Do you like your passport? Do you like the harp on the front of your passport? I wonder if I had asked you before I said that, would you have known there's a harp on the front of your passport? I like it. I want my maroony-looking passport with the harp on the front, but it could be going, and I wonder how much it will cost in consultancy fees to design whatever replaces it. But anyway, the Department of Foreign Affairs is considering changing the harp on passports to a design highlighting our diverse natural environment. A consultation was launched last week with any design change expected in the next few years. Red Sea has launched an online survey on the department's behalf, which takes around 5 minutes to complete. The list of animals suggested in the survey includes the curlew, the red squirrel, the bumblebee, Irish hare, and the barn owl. Meanwhile, plants include the shamrock, the bluebell, heather, St. Patrick's cabbage, the blackthorn and primrose. So would you like any of those things on the front of it instead of the harp? Maybe a little red squirrel for yourself, perhaps St. Patrick's cabbage? Or should we just leave it as is and spend the money it would take invariably on something else? Now, you wouldn't hand your passport in and get the new designed one. It would be as you renew them, but still, I think that's just someone's trying to come up with a problem that doesn't to fix a problem that doesn't exist there. Childhood friends of Derry Girls creator Lisa McGee have spoken of the mind-blowing success of the show ahead of the opening of a new exhibition. The new Derry Girls immersive exhibition, which opened to the public in the Tara Museum in Derry yesterday, have you been? Let us know what it was like, features props and set pieces from the BAFTA-winning sitcom, which follows the teenagers living in Derry in the mid-1990s during the final years of the Troubles. Fans of the show will be able to view parts of the original sets, including the Quinn's living room and kitchen, as well as props like Spice Girl costumes from Season 3, the Child of Prague statue, and Ma Mary's rosary bead. So it looks like fun. You can go in and sit in there and get a picture taken. Have you been? Do you intend to go? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Your WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right, okay. We are going to try now as best as we can. It's an extensive document and there's a lot in there. But we're going to now, after this break, try and see what's in this enhanced defective concrete blocks grant scheme. That's what the government's calling it. That's coming up after we take our first break of the morning. Please stay right where you are. Now we're going to talk about the, as it's called, Enhanced Effective Concrete Blocks Grant Scheme. We have invited Minister Dara O'Brien onto the show. It remains to be seen if he will... he's unavailable. Okay, this is that's not going to go very well then, is it? He's not available at all. And also, we invited Minister Charlie McConnell onto the show, but he still has... he still has a block on it, so we'll not hear from either of those two ministers, unfortunately, and we guarantee that we'd have given them a fair enough hearing. But anyway, that is what it is. We are joined, though, by people who are prepared to speak to the programme. Professor Paul Dunlop, Research Director for Geography and Environmental Sciences at Ulster University and a homeowner, of course. Professor, thanks for your time this morning. I greatly appreciate you joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, Greg.
And also Lisa Hone, Chair of the MICA Action Group. Lisa, good morning to you. Thank you also for joining us.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for inviting me on.
Right. I'll start with you, Lisa. I mean, is this the type of document that it's going to take some time to go through and sort of really find out if it's going to be a benefit of a lot of people? Or do you have a fair idea at this point what this enhanced scheme actually means for people?
I think there's two levels there, Greg. I think in broad terms, we understand what the scheme is. I mean, obviously, we're familiar with the legislation, we're familiar with the regulations, and there's not a huge departure as we would expect for the scheme in terms of what it's going to deliver or not deliver for homeowners. I think you rightly point out that there is a lot of detail. There's a lot, you know, those are big documents and there is a lot of detail. And we've always said the devil is in the detail with regard to this. So, yeah, we've only just had the documentation yesterday evening, like everybody else. So we've had time to sort of have an initial sort of read, but there's an awful lot of detail, especially with regard to the implementation that's not clear yet. And there's a lot of follow-up and a lot of questions that need to be asked of government and also the local authorities in terms of how this works for homeowners.
So just a couple of simple questions, and pardon my if some of these questions are so obvious it's silly, but there's a couple of things that we've talked about over the years, right? So say, for instance, the issue whereby it's external leaf only, but all the problems that come from doing that, whether an engineer might sign off on it or not, whether you might get insurance on it. Has that been resolved? Because, you know, like, are engineers, for example, going to sign off on just outer leaves? Or now is it all demolitions? Has anything in relation to that been addressed?
Well, the five options still exist in the scheme. So theoretically, homeowners could actually proceed forward with any of those five options. Now, the reality is that homeowners are, and those that are getting into the issue, I mean, there's a lot of homeowners there who still are coming to this very fresh and need to get into the detail. But the homeowners that are familiar with this issue are by and far advocating for option one, which is demolish and rebuild, because they know the reality of, you know, the science that's going on here, and I'm sure Professor Dunlop is going to speak more about that later. But the reality is that we're dealing with an issue that is fundamentally not freeze thaw. This is to do with what's in the blocks, and whether it's external, whether it's internal.
So as far as you know, Lisa, if someone opts for full demolition, can the scheme say, well, no, you don't qualify for that, it's outer leaf only?
Well, ultimately, it's going to be down to the housing agency to decide what option the homeowner goes forward with. So there's a slightly different way of going about things now. Previously, homeowners had to commission their IS 465 report, and then that went into the local council. And it was the technical team at the council that then decided, looking at the report and obviously with the submissions of the homeowner's engineer, how the homeowner should go forward or not. Now, what is going to happen now is that the homeowner has to commission what they call a building condition assessment report. That's almost like the first section of what the engineers would do with regard to the IS 465 report. And should you meet all the criteria on that, then you will be able to put an application in to the housing agency via the local council, and they will then commission the whole sort of suite of testing and assessment, and it will be the housing agency through their engineers and their technical teams that then decide what option they feel is appropriate for the homeowners.
Would either is there any reference to foundations in this new enhanced scheme? Because even if you were okay to proceed with the demolition, I know I wouldn't be building it on the old foundations, but I also know I couldn't afford to put new foundations in, so I would be banjaxed. So is there any reference to foundations in this enhanced scheme?
Well, Greg, you just that you've just highlighted one of the absolute main issues with this scheme. It's absolutely one of the most serious flaws in the scheme, in that it does not address the issue of foundations. So at the moment, we just don't have sufficient scientific research because government has, you know, not commissioned it. Finally, after huge amounts of pressure, and obviously huge credit to Paul for actually pushing on that one. But, you know, there is research going on now, but we just don't have the insight.
Yeah, but who would lay a block? Who would lay a block? Sorry, Lisa, I just want to move it along. And I hope you don't believe me to be ignorant. That's not my intention. But who would lay a block or a brick on the foundations that they've just tossed these crap blocks off of? I mean, no one's going to. But I don't think anyone. Well, maybe they might, but no, I certainly wouldn't.
I entirely agree with you. I entirely agree with you, Greg. And that's a fundamental issue, because the reality is that homeowners do not know whether the foundations on which they are being pushed to build on are fit for purpose or not fit for purpose. That is the fundamental question. And the government at the moment is not addressing that. They're just giving out a blanket statement saying expert opinion is that foundations are fit for purpose. However, that opinion is not scientifically reinforced. So we have this situation where the government wants to push the scheme and push homeowners down a route, but yet the homeowners understand that how can I possibly build on a foundation if I don't know whether it's fit for purpose or not. And it is one of the major roadblocks in this scheme as it stands at the moment. And you rightly say there's a whole lot of homeowners who will not proceed, either because they don't know what to do, they don't have the money to finance it. The government should have taken a far more conservative view with regard to not having the scientific information available. It should have been, if in doubt, take it out. Support the homeowners to move forward with that 100% assurance that what they're building on is fit for purpose. And this issue down the line is never going to reoccur again.
I'll come back to you. No, I want to come back to you because we've got a bit of time, and hopefully you too. I just think it's really remarkable. I'm not asking or expecting you to comment on it, but I think it's absolutely remarkable that we have a scheme, multi-billion euro scheme, finally announced for this problem. And this problem is primarily, at least started in Donegal, if we're not the worst affected. And you don't have either the local minister or the housing minister prepared to come on and welcome it or talk about it. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I don't know if that's telling or just people happen to be busy or whatever the case might be, but it certainly throws up quite a lot of questions for me. I mean, you should be coming on and going, wow, we finally brought this through. We finally delivered it. And yet it's announced and no senior government reaction to it at all. It's really quite remarkable. Professor Paul Dunlop is, as I say, Research Director for Geography and Environmental Scientists at Ulster University and, of course, an affected homeowner. Paul, your initial reaction to this, as I say, I don't know if there's any surprises, but we actually have this document now. We have this scheme. What's your initial reactions?
My initial reaction would be, at least now people have final clarity about what's available to allow them to either move on or at least calculate where they're going to be. So that's my initial thought, because this has been a very long delayed thing since I remember being in the Dáil last year giving scientific evidence to the housing committee, for the day that was meant to be pre-legislative scrutiny, which it wasn't. But you know, the whole idea of that was, we need to get this through quickly because we need to get people's homes fixed. But I mean, there's been information drip fed to the public the last year, and nothing has really changed. But at least it's there, it's black and white, so people can now go on and see the rates that you get for your home. So if your home's up to 180 square meters, you get 2,045 euro per square meter. Above that, you get less. So interestingly, they've brought on a sliding scale again. You know, there was a lot of kickback from that, if you remember. But effectively, that's what's been brought in again. So my initial feeling at the minute, without having much insight into what buildings cost, is that if you're on the smaller end of the scale, you're going to have a better chance of a grant that might get you moving again than if you're in a larger house. You know, like, it won't take you long to hit the cap. I did a quick calculation. So if your house is up to 180 square meters, you'll get £368,100. And then there's a cap of 420. So above that, house size, you've only got 51,900 to play with. You know, you don't have much more. So I think people in bigger homes are going to be really disappointed by this, because they're going to be left significantly short in terms of a redress scheme that's been promising to give people 100%. It's not. It's definitely not. Smaller homes probably could be there or thereabouts, depending on the sort of specifications they have in their home. But, you know, you got to remember to take out, you got to take out the people who went through stage one already. You're going to lose £6,000 or there or thereabouts from your testing fees that you've got to, that comes off the top of your grant. Then you got to take out on the fees for your engineer or your architect or your, what are they called now? There's like three different types of professionals. A quantity surveyor or a chartered surveyor can be part of as well. So depending on what their fees are, that's going to take a chunk out of the grant as well too. And then if you decide, for example, that you're not prepared to build on your foundations because your foundation concrete came from the same supplier as your blocks that your house is falling apart from, then that's an additional cost. So I think in the next few months, you're going to get a clear idea of how this grant's going to fall out for people. But there are at least a bit of hope now today that people can go and actually start calculating what they're going to get, and they can start talking to builders and see if they're going to be there or thereabouts.
In relation to this being a 100% scheme, we revisited all of this because the 90-10 scheme wasn't a 90-10 scheme at all. I'm just confused as to, in terms of, you know, the demolition, you know, inevitably foundations having to be changed and the rebuild cost. What kind of a house, how big a house, because you can't build a smaller house than the one you've knocked down. How big a house could you build for €420,000 with all the additional costs? I mean, maybe if you've got a three-bedroom bungalow, could you possibly change the foundations and rebuild the house back to the way it was before you were infected with this defective material? I mean, do we know? Could you build a three-bedroom bungalow if that's what you actually had? I mean, what can you get with everything that would have to be spent for £420,000?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it would be really good if you could get an architect or a quantity surveyor onto the program and talk to them, because they should know the details of this. Mm. I mean, I know that ultimately defective homeowners have been given a rate by the SCSI rates. But that reflects reality on the ground. You know, they could tell you better than someone like myself. You know, I'm not involved in that end of things. But, you know, if it's definitely clear that the rates that are being given are higher for the smaller end of the homes in Donegal than the higher end, the ones that are larger. And, you know, I do feel really sorry for the people who invested early on. They have a sort of larger home. They're going to be out.
Well, you see, the thing is, and I'll bring Lisa back into a second, especially with this sliding scale being brought back in, it doesn't really talk to how things work in this county, how people might afford to or to build a larger home, because it sort of presumes that if you have a larger home, you are better resourced. But that's not always the case. No. Like, you might have someone who lives their life somewhat differently or is very handy that's able to build a larger home compared to what I might be able to, because I'm going to have to sort of get contractors and stuff to do it. But this sort of talks to the fact that if you have a larger square footage, then clearly you've got better resources, or at least you should have. But that's simply just not a reality here.
It's really flawed assessment from the government, if that's what they're thinking is. You know, ultimately it doesn't matter if people build bigger houses or smaller houses. You know, your circumstances are what your circumstances are, and if you're early on, you could afford to build a larger home. It's absolutely no fault of yours that you were supplied defective blocks from aggregates that were non-compliant under EU regulations, and your house is now falling apart. I mean, it's a real travesty. You know, people have been, ultimately, when you go back to the root source of this, I mean, people have been really badly impacted by failure of government to regulate the construction industry in Ireland. That's what this problem is. And it doesn't matter if your house is 5,000 square foot home. You bought the material in good faith and you were sold a defective product, and they should have put that right. Mm. But they went down, as you know, they went down every route possible to make this as difficult as possible for homeowners.
Lisa, I mean, obviously, you know, we compare this to other schemes that have been there, and we've been doing that over the course of the last couple of years, how Donegal homeowners are being treated differently to other affected homeowners. We celebrate that other people affected by the likes of pyrite and what have you got a better deal, but it is literally geographical discrimination. Why are homeowners in Donegal and the other affected counties not being treated the same? As I say, we're not having to pump this money out now. We're not having to dig into all of our reserves. This is a multi-year scheme with lots of clawback as well in it, let's not forget, as well, in terms of creating employment, but also VAT and all that kind of stuff. It still doesn't really, we still don't know, Lisa, why Donegal and other homeowners are being treated to other homeowners whose houses and flats and apartments deteriorated through no fault of their own.
I just think the reality is, unfortunately, geography plays a huge factor in the way that we're treated. Unfortunately, we're not on the doorstep of Leinster House. We are 4 hours down the road. Donegal has often been referred to as the forgotten county, and this crisis really underlines that, you know, when it comes to crunch matters like this, that is unfortunately very true. Also, just if you think about the political representation here, unfortunately, we don't have a huge swathe of government ministers and TDs within the county. I think there's a calculated risk gone on here in terms of how much they're prepared to lose potentially politically. And those in Leinster with regard to pyrite, or those in Leinster with regard to defective apartments, they have far greater political sway purely by the fact of their geographical location. And this is a civil rights issue. It is a civil rights issue because the homeowners who are victim to this issue, which is regulatory and market surveillance failure on behalf of the state, which supplied defective product into the market for years and years unchecked. We are the victim in the same way as anybody else, whether it be defective apartments, victims of pyrite underfloors. But yet we are being treated very, very differently. And we are not anywhere near the 100% redress that the government is continually talking about. And, you know, it is discrimination and it is a civil rights issue.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it is what it is. As I say, you know, let's say, for instance, people wait to find out some clarity on the foundations, for an example. That pushes us ever closer to a general election, for an example. So are people going to say, right, well, by the time, if we ever get clarity on the foundations, I might as well wait another year because the opposition has made these amazing promises. It would be unbelievable if they're able to follow through on those. But also we've got the efforts ongoing in Europe. We've got the court case that is taking place. Is anyone going to roll the dice and spend an additional 50, 60, 70, 80,000 euro engaging in this scheme when there are a few other irons in the fire? Do you know what I mean? And this is not, I'm not criticizing the scheme. I don't know. I'm just simply trying to tease out the reality of people's lives here in Donegal. I mean, who is going to not sort of say, well, let's see how Coleman Legal get on, or let's see how our European endeavours get on, or let's see if Sinn Féin actually back up what they're saying, because they've promised the sun, August the moon, August the stars. How do you think the public will react, Lisa? And I'll ask Paul the same question once you've finished.
I think it's very much going to depend on each homeowner's individual take and circumstance. There are homeowners who just literally cannot wait. They feel that they have to move forward because they're in desperate circumstances and time is not on their side.
Yeah.
And they basically have to move forward. There are others who, I think, as you point out, may sort of hedge their bets and see what happens down the road. That's if they have that luxury of maybe being in a home that's not so badly affected. So I think personal circumstances are going to dictate how people move forward, and also means and resources. That's also going to dictate. There are many people whose they're so badly impacted with regard to their mental health, they just can't bear the thought of actually having to deal with this for this prolonged amount of time. And to be honest, even if they're having to put considerable resource of their own into it to get to the other side, to have this issue out of their lives. There's many homeowners that we talk to are in that situation. Mm-hmm. And they just say, it's really difficult. I don't really have the resources, but I'm going to do everything I can to get to the other side. And I'll use the scheme in the best way I can to support that and to go forward.
Paul, I'll put the same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think the people who can afford to move on will move on. That's what I think. I mean, we're all caught in a sort of horrific situation where your family home is ruined. But there will be people who can afford to move on, and I think that they will. And for the people who can't afford to move on, they're going to be stuck in limbo. And their only hope, really, for 100% redress and for the affordability of the scheme is if Coleman Legal works. Do you know what I mean? Even though the endeavours in Europe are happening, those endeavours are really about trying to stop this happening again in the future. Like the European Commission, from my understanding of being there with them, they will not be acting retrospectively or trying to go back to the Irish government going, you know, you actually need to do right by these people and give them a full 100% redress. This is clearly about one thing only from their point of view, is to understand market surveillance in Ireland and ensuring that it's not a paper exercise, but it's something that is working effectively. And we clearly know that it's not, because we've seen Maria Feeling from the Market Surveillance Office down in Dublin stating that it's a national emergency. So I think, just to answer your question, if you can afford it, I think you will. And I totally agree with Lisa. There are people who are just absolutely in dire straits mentally, trying to look at their home falling apart around their ears, and will have no choice but feeling they have to do this. I think that it would be good if you could get the 100% redress focus groups on and talk about that. There's a
we'll over the coming days for sure.
Yeah, because there's a group doing work on the banking side and on the finances. This, you know, and what's really disappointing in this legislation is that the banking sector and the insurance sector have got off completely scot free. So, you know, they need to come to the table to help people move on with their lives as well too.
Okay. Professor Paul Dunlop, thanks for your time. I really do appreciate you taking the invite. Are you all right to hold for a second, Lisa? Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to take a very quick break, and then if Councillor Martin McDermott's going to be joining us then as well. Okay. So as I mentioned, just to be absolutely fair, believe it or not, I do try and be. We invited Minister Charlie McConlogue on, but he sent a text. He's not available to come on. He says, I would love to, but as I've made it very clear previously, I'll be not talking any further to Greg Hughes, as I've made it clear that his show is infused and dominated by his views on all issues and is biased entirely towards his own views on every matter of importance. It's an unfortunate situation that our county can't get impartial coverage when he's presenting on what is the only morning show in the county. So that's Minister McConlogue's review of this show. Not glowing, I have to say. Now, what I would suggest is you listen to any programme, be it Liveline, Clare Byrne, any show whatsoever, where issues of the day are discussed. And those issues are not driven by the presenter. They're driven by listeners, concerned groups, families that represent people with autism trying to get services, people who are trying to engage with the health service, people who are campaigning for roads infrastructure. It seems now that if you give those people a voice, that you are being seen as being impartial, or you're seen... And now, personally, if I am, I apologise. I certainly, it's never my intention. That's not what I come across at, or that's not what I try to do. I'm not a shock jock. It is literally to give the people of Donegal and the North West a space where they can express their views. Not for me to express my views. If there is glaring issues, it's impossible not to comment. But you listen to any other show, and it is precisely the same. Any other independent station, any other call-in show, listen to it and you'll hear it's presented pretty much in the same fashion. But anyway, I fully respect the Minister's views in that regard. Right, Councillor Martin McDermott, what's your... And I do appreciate you speaking to me, Martin. What is your views on all of this? Not when I say on all of this, I'm certainly not going to stick it to you. I don't mean the text, Martin. What's your views on all of this as it relates to the more important issue of this scheme and the people it affects?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Lisa. I think it's an important day, Greg, for a lot of families because, you know, over the last, particularly over the last 6 months, we've been in a situation where we've been constantly waiting on regulations to be enacted. And families that have went ahead and started work, started building, demolishing and rebuilding, remediating their homes, dependent that regulations was going to be enacted in March, April, May, June. Now it's July. Taking that chance of going ahead, thinking that extra money would be available and finding themselves in very, very, very difficult circumstances. So it's an important day for those families because they've taken the chance and as I say, found themselves waiting and waiting and waiting on the regulations to come out so that they could get the extra money. Look, the regulations, the guidelines, they're all out there now. I suppose they're nothing particularly massively new, what we had going back to March time. There are some changes. There was, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, there's been quite a lot of engagement with the department. I suppose the from our perspective, from Donegal County Council's perspective, we would have been disappointed that the engagement with ourselves has been so late in the day, in the 11th hour. We would have thought and we would have, you know, expected engagement with the local authority at a lot earlier basis than what had happened. But look, it has happened and we've had engagement with officials from the department. Our officials from the council have had quite a bit of engagement with officials from the department in the last 3 or 4 weeks to try and streamline some of the process that we're going to have with this new scheme. One of the big issues, and we touched on this yesterday, Greg, was the building condition assessment and the issue in relation to planning compliance, in relation to building regulation compliance. That building regulation compliance has now been removed. The planning compliance is still there. That will be something that people will have to think about and make sure that the house that they are going onto the scheme with is planning compliant. And if it's not, that will be something that will have to be dealt with before they do enter the scheme through the local authority and through the housing agency. So I suppose that is something that we would have been trying to remove as well, but it was something the department weren't prepared to take out the planning. They did, as I say, remove the one for the building regulations. There are other elements, you know, as well, Greg, that we do need to keep the pressure on and try to change and try to move forward with. One in particular in relation to the when a house has been passed on from if a family member dies to another family member, that has to be the principal private residence. We don't feel that that's right. We think that's something that needs to change. The department have given us a commitment that they will engage with us on a regular basis now, once the scheme is enacted. But I suppose over the next 2 or 3 months, the big emphasis from a council perspective is to get the applications that are people are live on at the minute, that are building their houses, and the applications that people have done remediation over the last 2 or 3 years, to get those people their money back, to get them the money that they have to get. 247 was the last amount that they were getting, and now they're being entitled up to a max of 420,000 less the auxiliary costs. So I think that's the most important thing that the council have to do in the next couple of months, is to get that money paid back to those people, and particularly the people that's, as I say, that are building their houses.
So, Martin, obviously, other than the stuff that, you know, the work will continue on, I mean, do you think for everyone, I mean, some people this is going to be, it will get them back into a house with hopefully a minimum of money out of the pocket. For many, it won't.
Yeah.
Is this 100% scheme? Is this the scheme we were promised? Do you rate this a good scheme, if that's a fair question, for the majority of people?
Well, is it 100% for everyone? No, it's not. I think we have to be clear. It's not 100% for everyone, Greg. It's 100% for people that have a certain size of a house, for people that have a house that's somewhere over 2,300 square foot. Those families will certainly have to dip into their pocket. There's no way out of that. So to say it's 100% for everyone, I think would be wrong. It's not. It's certainly a much, much better scheme than the 90-10 scheme. It certainly gives brings an awful lot of extra people onto the umbrella of being able to afford to remediate their house. It has made the process a lot more simpler at stage two and stage three, where you won't have to go through the process of, you know, the stage two particularly has been very cumbersome in the 90-10 scheme, where you had to get all your costs and divide them all out into different elements, and that had all to be done through the local authority. That has been taken away. So the process at stage two will certainly be simpler. But to answer your question, it's not 100% for everyone, absolutely not.
All right, okay, but the work continues. All right, thank you very much indeed, Martin. I genuinely appreciate you coming on the show, and thank I hope me and you always have a fair and balanced exchange.
Thanks. Thank you, Greg.
Take care of yourself, Martin. Right, Lisa, last word to you then. As I say, you know, and I think Paul made some good suggestions about looking at other avenues and working groups that are ongoing, but at least we have something now, and we can people can see what is in it for them, how they can make it work, whether they want to work with it. That sort of anticipation in the last minute we have, Lisa, at least that's we have something we can get our teeth into, whether it tastes good or not.
Yeah, I think so. I think like the uncertainty, the endless delays, the missed deadlines, I think that's been a very, very cruel process for homeowners, very frustrating process for homeowners. And I think there is relief that even though it's not everything that homeowners wanted and needed, it certainly is definite. And now they can get to grips with, obviously, you know, the reality of a scheme as opposed to promises and pledges. This is real now. And for those people who have not even been able to go near the scheme, there's an opportunity there now. There's a lot of people locked out because they just plainly could not afford, you know, thousands of euros to commission IS465 engineers reports. Okay. For those people now, there is a pathway forward. So I think now, you know, we need to take this away. We need to digest. Everybody concerned needs to, you know, read the questions and answers, read the guidelines, get into it. Probably the Euro questions and answers is probably the most friendly version. If homeowners are thinking, how does this work? Where do I start? I would recommend them to go to that. And then they will understand how it affects their particular situation.
Okay. Lisa, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Lisa Holm, there's chair of MICA Action Group. Okay, we'll be back with more on your 9 till noon show. After 10, we've got Community Guard information. Then later on, Father Sean Doherty will be joining us for a conversation. Stay tuned for all of that. We're heading towards the news now.